So for those of you who are new to retreats here at IRC, I think that you've probably already noticed that we have very carefully choreographed event here so that so many volunteers could come and put on a retreat like this. And so a lot of it has been given careful thought to, including the way that we bring a retreat to a conclusion. And kind of it starts, that transition into leaving most fully begins now. Maybe for some of you it began when we announced that you can get your boarding passes printed. we could say nothing about leaving whatsoever. Just keep going, sitting, walking, and then ring a bell tomorrow at 12:15 and bye. That's kind of how they used to do the 3-month retreat at IMS back in the 1970s. And when they got a call from the local grocery store about that one of the retreatants was walking around in her grocery store in her pajamas, they decided that some different kind of transition was needed than just, being by. And so now there's what's called an integration time and a transition time, and kind of to let it be more gentle and kind of reintegrate your personality. I'm sorry. just be ready to leave so it's harmonious enough to get in your car. And I don't know if it's true, but there's the story that's told of the person who was on the freeway after retreat and pulled over by the police and highway patrol, and the person coming up kind of gruff and saying, "Do you know how fast you were driving?" And the person said, "No, I'm probably 70, 75? 35. So we want to get you ready. So having your laugh is part of it, just. And then we have a little bit of changes in here now. We'll talk a little bit about leaving. We'll have a little time for questions and answers. And energetic is a little different. And then we'll go back into silence. And then tomorrow there'll be silence in the morning like it has been. And then it'll be a little more energetic when we start cleaning your rooms and packing. And then we come back in silence. And then we go back and clean the center. And there's kind of this alternation between the silence and the activity. And that's also by design, because the sitting time, the silence, is actually very important. Sometimes some of the greatest learnings that can happen in retreat is as we kind of get more activated and more active in our mind and stuff, and we start seeing things in a new way, or we can learn to relate to ourselves and our mind and our energetic way in a new way. And I say that, I want to underscore how important it is, because I know I have on retreats, and maybe a number of people have, as soon as the mind starts thinking about leaving and gets more active, the conclusion can be, well, the retreat's over for me, so I might as well just not meditate anymore. I'll just sit here and pretend, think menus or shopping lists, or, use the time well. But in fact, the way to use the time well is to actually really continue the very same thing, which is to what's going on, see what's happening here, and really check in and learn. And maybe it won't have the same calm or the same stability or the same intimacy that you might have, earlier in the retreat, but it's maybe more important now. And it's also helpful for this transition to go back into your life, because there also you'll be more activated sooner or later. And so you start practicing being present and mindful and wise, compassionate, with yourself in a more activated state. And then you do it in small steps, hopefully, here as we progressively get ready to leave. And then you're better prepared to start continue that process as you leave. And if you just kind of say, well, it's over already and I might as well, X, whatever your X is. and not pay attention, then you lose a golden opportunity of the retreat. So we're going to talk a little bit about this transition. Each of us is going to say maybe one point and just go down and we'll start with Don.
I actually heard that after the IMS retreats for a period of time, this was in the early days, that they would have costume parties after the 3-month retreat. Isn't that crazy? Could you imagine us having a costume party here now? This is much better. I think the most helpful thing for me when I've been leaving retreat, two things. One was the moment of freedom that I felt. It's actually relating to them as touchstones. That I didn't need to doubt that they occurred because my present moment experience was so unlike what I experienced on the retreat. That makes any sense? So these moments of freedom that you've tapped into, that have just arisen, allow them to be touchstones in your daily life, to know that that's a possibility for your heart and your mind. You don't have to hang on to them. You can't, actually, because the conditions are changing. And can you allow your life to be a field of practice where, just thinking of the text from my friend, the conditions for awakening are there, believe it's possible. Like, the conditions for awakening are our lives. We're just allowing our lives to be this field of practice for us. Another thing that's really helped is there's some intention that I have or some teaching that I've heard to not turn it into an ideal that I'm then like carrying with me in my daily life and that I'm like judging myself against. So that it becomes the source of like judgment, and like all the possibilities get very small at that point when I'm relating to an intention or some teaching as if it's an ideal that I need to live up to or live into. And if I can relate to it as a possibility that my heart is attuning to. Like, there are just so many more possibilities. It's not circumscribed by this ideal. Yeah.
Should I go first? I think it's wise to think of any retreat you're on that's twice as long as it's scheduled. Mm. So this week we have one more week of the retreat. And so if you feel any kind of way unusual than expected for the next week, just remember you're still on retreat. And so you give your permission to be unusual. It's okay. It's just a retreat. Don't need to come to great conclusions. It's going to be this way forever. Don't go home this week and sell your house, give all your possessions away, and go join the monastery. Wait at least a week. Don't this week decide that because your energy spiked and then crashed that, or you felt sad or felt angry when you came home, or you just felt so elated that it was like, you know, that this means that from now on, you will be this way. Only thing to conclude is, oh, it's the second week of the retreat. Keep it that simple. Don't make anything really big, and just be patient and continue the practice for one more week, and then you'll see. you'll have a different perspective.
Some good advice. I'm realizing that I so love daily life practice that my mind is flooded with ideas, and I'm trying to figure out which one to start with. Because daily life practice is where really the Dhamma becomes a lifestyle. It's a way of life. So a couple of thoughts. One is, one thing that I've found really helpful is where we started here on this retreat. Which is connecting with why it matters, connecting with intention. Even if I think I know what that is, it's helpful to just touch that in explicitly in the mind. And to invite ease in the body. To remember to relax in the body. I've found that to be really, really helpful. Just time to time, okay, what can I release? What can I release in this body? And I think the other practice that we take from the retreat into daily life that I've found really helpful is really appreciating the wholesome when it's present. So when awareness arises spontaneously, because all these seeds have been planted here on retreat. So they're going to sprout in daily life. So when they do, just a simple thank you to it. Just a simple, oh, I'm aware. To really greet that, to acknowledge it, to appreciate it. It helps it grow. So I've found that to be really helpful. As opposed to kind of sometimes that tendency of like, oh, I'm not as aware as I was on retreat, and not as mindful, or don't feel as concentrated, like just seeing all the things that are not happening. Sometimes we can sort of fall into that place. So my wish for you is that you will recognize the wholesome that is here in your life as it unfolds.
Sometimes I find my mind taking these teachings, trying to like overlay them on my life. like trying to make it, like make myself see the teachings in a particular way. And I found that like turning them into a question totally flips the attitude and changes how I'm relating to the teaching. It like becomes alive because it's a question and there's curiosity behind it. So take this like teaching around Anicca, things constantly shifting and changing. Just asking, are things shifting in this moment? And there's something about just the question that like allows my mind to get broad and for me to just rest back and see. And it's much better than like trying to project an idea or an ideal into conditions in my life.
Some friends of mine went to hear the Dalai Lama many years ago at a big convention center, so many, many people. And he did some kind of teachings, but then there was a Q&A, and someone asked him for the fastest way to enlightenment. And he paused for a long time, stood there, and at some point he started to cry. And he said, something about feeling really saddened by this idea that the pursuit of the quick and easy, it's like the acquisition of enlightenment, or I have to become enlightened fast, or so I can go on to other things like my iPhone. And and so this idea of patience and being in it for the long term and having some humility about what we're up against and not go home and have this high standard you're measuring yourself against, but just kind of rest on the sincerity of your dedication. And that counts for a lot. And that's what grows. And it's like a magnet, the sincerity of your dedication, just to practice the best you can, is like a magnet for wholesome states.
Daily life practice that I've found really helpful is also to tune into an easeful awareness by just kind of tuning into how if we have the capacity to hear, how hearing is happening effortlessly without trying. It's just already happening. If there's a capacity, if there's a capacity to see, seeing is just happening. The body, sense, experience, touch, experience, it's already just happening effortlessly. And that invites a sense of relaxing in the mind that I've found to be quite supportive in daily practice, daily life practice that's informal even. You can do it at any time. You don't need Wi-Fi access. It's happening. How is this happening? How is this happening.
So, well, we could take a few minutes, maybe three or so questions. If you have any questions you'd like to ask us, especially about this transition to leaving here and practicing outside of a retreat mode, or anything that seems important. Yes, but I think you've maybe use the mic.
I can talk loud.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if you...
Is it on?
It sounded like it was on, but
yeah.
It wasn't on.
It
doesn't...
Tap it?
No, it's not.
The red button on the very bottom. Hold it in for a moment and then...
Yeah, patience. Yeah. Okay. I'm wondering if you have any guidelines for frequency of practice, duration of practice, after leaving the retreat, like 1 hour a day, 2 hours a day.
Always. In terms of practice, that's the answer. Always, forever. But I think you might mean something like...
Well, like sitting, walking.
Sitting.
Like, yeah.
You're limiting your practice to that? Poor guy. So much more than sitting. But we can talk about sitting, too. I think the important thing to say, probably the realistic, is to sit as long and as frequently as it works in your life. So you have to figure out what's the right way to sit that works really practically for your life. If you have too high a goal, then it's frustrating and you don't ever do it because your life doesn't allow it. So you have to tailor make it for yourself. But I have this kind of belief that if you sit every day for 45 minutes, then you start seeing the momentum building over months and years in a nice way. And that 45 minutes could be all at once or it could be in two sessions through the day. And when I started doing that, I learned to sit every day when being at San Francisco Zen Center, and they never sat on Sundays. And so I just thought that's the way it's done. And so I never sat on Sundays. And that, I think, for me, I think that was kind of wise. I think it was nice to have... Not that I had pressure to sit, it was just kind of nice to not have it, just have something else.
Thank you.
And some of you who love sitting every day and don't take Sunday off, continue.
Okay. This is something I've been worried about all week. not obsessively, but here and there about just basically going back to the news. And this has been a problem a lot the last year. I actually feel like I'm fine not checking my phone on retreat. I don't really care about social media that much anymore, but the news and what's going on in the world now just feels really important. And I think I've definitely gotten into this loop where I'm just, you know, checking all the time because it feels important to do that. And I'm just wondering how, if you have any advice on how to approach, I know it's a big question, but how to approach being engaged, you know, while not obsessing over it, and if there's any practices around that.
Okay, she tapped her nose.
There's a code here, I don't quite understand.
Oh, the news. Yeah. We care, so we want to know. Yeah, we care, and we want to know. It's easy to get saturated by the news and the sense of overwhelm. So, especially when I get off retreat, I like to, what I'll do is I have a subscription to the New York Times. So I give myself, even before I pick up the phone, it's like I give myself a limit. And it's not even a time limit. It's I'm just reading headlines for that day. That's it. I'm just reading headlines. In my phone, scroll through. I'm just getting a summary of the news. And there will be the impulse, and you will feel it, to tap on that story. Don't do it. Don't tap on the story. It's easy to fall into a rabbit hole and just read one story after another, and then all of our anxiety and worry starts to kind of collapse in on us. So again, giving ourselves a time of day when we check the news and giving ourselves a time limit. That's been really, really helpful for me. And then sometimes I'll just check my state of mind and it's like, no, I can't be near the news today. It's just too tender. So just tracking and listening to the heart to see, like, can the heart turn towards what may be in the news? Not today, or not right now, at least. But yeah, just time limits, commitments, checking in with yourself. They're really helpful. You're
welcome. I'd like to add something, too. I'd like to add something. It's a very important question. I think it's, you know, somehow with technology and devices and the instantaneous nature of the news, kind of that there's kind of become kind of an addiction to news and what's happening and staying present. And I learned a very important lesson when I was at the Zen monastery, Tassajara, in the early 1980s. Back in those primitive times, they we had paper newspapers. And it was a little bit hard. You had to turn the pages. The blisters we would get. And build character. But at the monastery, we would get the news. Newspapers would come late, like days after they were printed. And so the news was always old. And I could feel that I had a very different relationship to the news, even if it was a day-old newspaper, than if it was the brand-new newspaper. And I didn't get so emotionally invested or caught or when it was a day old. And that was a very important lesson, because why is it that I feel like I need to know it now, when I don't need to know it now? I can know it tomorrow just fine. So what's going on in me? What's the anxiety? What's the pull? What's the sense of authority? What is it? What's going on in me? And that becomes a subject of mindfulness. That's the news. Mm. That's what's, you know, important. Because what you need to know, you can get the next day. And one way I do that I find makes me much more emotionally, very differently relationship with the news, is if there's some big thing that I want to understand better, rather than what's posted on the news, is I'll read about it on Wikipedia, and it's like an encyclopedia, right? So they're not trying to grab the reader's attention, and they're not trying to get you excited and buy more, you know, click on more things, and so there's not that emotional kind of journalism, which is kind of getting people excited, that at Wikipedia. And you'll probably learn more than your friends who are reading the news if you go on the Wikipedia and read all about the particular thing that it is. And you get, you know, it's a very, all the details and everything. And, you know, I don't know how accurate it is, but chances are overall it's more accurate than some of the newspapers you read anyway. So it's a good place to kind of be emotionally involved and I mean, not be so emotionally involved, but still be well informed. So, so well, thank you for your questions, and we have to move on to. At this point in the retreat, I'd like to offer my appreciation to IRC, because I think I got this very strong sense from the group as a whole that you have a lot of appreciation for being here, and so maybe it doesn't need to be said much, but part of the, you know, the medium is the message, partly here at IRC, and it's not just a message, but Nisha was talking about the wholesome. There's a lot of wholesome goodness that goes into this place, and it's kind of saturates the place, and it's part of the, it's kind of meant to nourish our practice. It's meant to be kind of like the support and the fuel and the inspiration and the you know, what kind of inspires us and keeps us going and shows us something very important about what Dharma is. That so that the very qualities of what Dharma practice is are manifested in how this place is operates and is run. So that when we come here, all of us, the teachers too, that we feel it in the community, in the building, in the practice here, and we feel it, and that inspires that in ourselves. And shows us in something very important about the practice and feeds us in important ways. And so some of the really important qualities that are here are, there's a lot of goodwill. And I mean, I feel the goodwill of all of you here, and you know, you all did your jobs and activities, and I felt there was a lot of care here. And there has now been, you know, I think if we start from the time when it was a gleam in the parents' eyes, if we start, you know, the first kind of time when this kind of idea of a retreat center began, it was probably something like 2003 or 4. So the goodwill and the inspiration and then wanting to share the Dharma and practice in this kind of form of a center like that has been building, and, you know, generations of people have coming through and have supported it and wanted to see it happen and put a lot of time into it. And the amount of time that some people have put into making a place so you could come is phenomenal. And they just, because they love the practice, they love people, they wanted to bring those two together, and they pour their love into this place. And that continues to this day. And there's a whole large pool of volunteers to make this place work, and the resident volunteers, and it's just a field of goodwill. It's also a field of generosity. That goodwill is expressed in people's volunteering and people who offer financial support and all that. And it's kind of amazing that we have this and we can offer it freely, that we're committed to that because we feel that's what really nourishes us, teaches us something about freedom. And I never would have guessed that we would end up in a place like this. I mean, occasionally I'm a little bit embarrassed. And then I remember that people wanted us to have this place. People wanted to support us. This wonderful nun named Panawati came here. The very opening day she came to look around, and she came up to me and said, "Gil, I travel all over the country, and all over this country, people want IRC to work." I was like, wow. And so, you know, there's just all this people. So it's here because of all these people who wanted it to be here. And my thought that we were going to get a, you know, moldy, rundown Boy Scout camp in the woods, in the damp woods, it didn't quite work out. And then there's a lot of gratitude here. That also is beautiful to feel. I feel tremendous gratitude when I come down here, and I kind of love, you know, hearing the gratitude people have for IRC, and It's also part of the food that kind of fuels life and gives kind of inspiration and delight to life and the practice, and it's a great thing. And gratitude, you know, lots of gratitude for the practice and lineage, and you know, Nisha, Don, and I, you know, we're the beneficiary of all these wonderful teachers who have supported us and guided us, and you know, and feel the gratitude of all the support we've gotten. And I couldn't have practiced as much as I did without a, you know, all the people I practiced with and inspired me. And you know, it's, for many of us, it's kind of feeling, you know, we benefited so much, and then just pouring forth of gratitude. I feel that also from you all. I feel lots of good feelings, good generosity. And so I just want to name it at this point in the retreat for the purpose of making sure you get nourished by it. Feast on it. And if you feast on it and nourish it and take it in, maybe it's contagious. And maybe you'll spread it across the lands. And soon enough, we'll have lots of IRCs everywhere. Wouldn't that be nice? Every county should have one. So, is it your turn? You're ready. You want to come up here?